He wrote Angels in America, and his very fine new musical, Carolina Change, is up for 6 Tony Awards this weekend. But it's his play Homebody Cobble that has been through at least 17 rewrites since it was first staged in 2001. It just completed a new run at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. And when theater critics asked to see the script to write their reviews, Kushner's last-minute changes were scribbled on before the copies were made. Tony Kushner, thank you for joining me today in Studio 360.
It's a pleasure.
And I guess pausing from more rewrites, maybe?
I'm actually done both with Caroline and with Homebody Cobble.
Really? So you're really done?
I'm done. I mean, Caroline is actually finished and Homebody Cobble is abandoned.
Abandoned? That sounds negative and desperate.
It doesn't feel desperate. And it's not entirely negative, although I, in a way, wish that I had another 5 or 6 weeks to work on it. But I really promised myself, since I've been working on this thing for 7 years, that when the play opened at BAM, I would stop. And I knew when I first started writing it that I would have a lot of trouble stopping. And so I know it's really time to honor that promise.
It's in the nature of this work that you just wanted to keep going, keep going, keep going?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I could sort of tell at the beginning that I was launching into something that I didn't really couldn't really see the end of, and that it was trying to pull together two very, very disparate ideas, storylines, thematic elements, and that doing that was going to be very hard, and it was a huge gamble in the first place. And I could kind of feel that it was going to be one of those plays that you could just spend the rest of your life desperately trying to get right.
And the two basic ideas are, for our listeners?
Well, it starts with a woman who's a housewife in London in 1998 who's fantasizing about a trip to Afghanistan, having read an old guidebook to the city of Kabul written in 1965 before the horrors of the last 20 years were visited on Afghanistan. And she's the wife of in a very unhappy family with an unhappy daughter and an unhappy husband. And then there's all of Afghanistan and Afghan history. And in the monologue, which is an hour long, and that's how the play begins, the first thing that I wrote, it balances, I think, her sort of personal misery and the political misery and historical misery in Afghanistan, which, of course, are widely discrepant on any kind of measuring scale. And then in the second part,
Afghanistan has suffered more than she.
Quite a bit more than most of us have. I didn't want to use Afghanistan as sort of a metaphor for her suffering, and she's, in fact, refusing to do that. That's part of what the monologue is about. The second part of the play deals with her having actually gone to Afghanistan right after Clinton bombed the suspected terrorist training camps in Khost.
And, in 1998.
In 1998, in August. And she's just happened to be there when this happens. And she is, at least her husband and her daughter are told, that she's been set upon by a mob and torn to pieces in Kabul, mistaken for an American, although she's British. Her family comes to Afghanistan, to Kabul, to try and get her body and bring it back. And the body has been lost. And that starts a whole sort of adventure. And I knew that this sort of family drama set in Afghanistan, but also very much addressing the tragedy of Afghanistan, gave me two very complicated things that apparently had nothing to do with one another, which is always an exciting way to start on a piece. But I knew this one was going to be really tough.
Okay, that's inherent to the piece. But then, okay, you've been working on it for 7 years. It's staged for the first time 3 years ago. What, other than your own reaction to seeing actors perform it, drives changes? Do you see how the audience reacts? Do you read reviews? What makes you decide to do this differently or expand this or cut that?
I usually try not to read reviews. In Homebody, when it opened at right after 9/11 at New York Theater Workshop, I read a few reviews, or my partner Mark read them to me. I don't actually like to see the print, but I let him read it, and so I could tell you, shut up, so that I don't look. If it starts to get too nasty, I can turn it off
and yell at him instead.
And yell at him instead of the critics. So I'd yell at somebody at least. But actually, you know, it wasn't that they were all that nasty. He actually pointed out, my partner did, that there were a number of complaints that were coming up over and over again, and some of the things that they said, Mark said, you know, if one moron tells you that it's raining outside, it could just be that somebody was pissing on his head. But if 11 morons tell you it's raining, bring an umbrella just in case. So I listened to about 11 critics and then thought, okay, there are certain themes that are emerging here that maybe I should attend to, things that I was unsatisfied with also in the play. And every time I've heard the play, this is the scary thing about it, every time I hear it, I think, oh, you know, if I just if I put this old line that I've taken out back in here, if I take this out, or if I move this plot point around, and it's just clear now, I already have a set of rewrites in my head. If I were going to allow myself, I could do another little set of rewrites, at least for the next production. So it's time to stop.
I wonder, Tony, given your own predilection for rewriting and rewriting, what you think of what Edward Albee's done.
Well, that woman is kind of scary.
You must have people like that.
You meet people like that, and there's a sort of an aggrieved, proprietary tone that they take, and it's touching, and it's also a little bit alarming. I think he's right. He's not changing the Zoo story. He's amplifying it. Even if he rewrote the Zoo story, if he decided he wanted to actually change the words of the script, there are 100 million copies of the Zoo story out there. So Edward has only a certain amount of control over what he's doing. The play will outlast him and Sarah and us. And, you know, people in the future will take a look at it, and if what he's done with Peter and Jerry is an improvement or is deemed to be an improvement, or if some people like it better than just doing the Zoo story alone, they'll do it that way. And if not, the Zoo story will still be there. It has a whole history of being performed, you know, on its own, and I think it'll go back to that. So I think in a certain sense, his work, as was the work of Shaw or Whitman, let's say, who changed Song of Myself 100 million times. Every time he put out a new edition of Leaves of Grass, he screwed up the poem more and more. But we still have the 1848 original edition, and it's magnificent, first draft status. And that's what we read now. Nobody goes and reads the ones from the late 19th century.
And you mentioned Whitman, which is an interesting example of a cautionary tale about revising and not thinking you're done. But it seems to me theater and your experience and Edward Albee's experience, theater is almost unique in inviting this to happen because of the nature of the process of production, that things are done in workshops before they ever are staged. And then because they are staged, they don't exist like a novel or a film or a record kind of forever in a piece of amber. The nature of theater is that they get redone.
Yeah, and also that it's not unlike film, let's say, although now we have DVDs with everybody's director's cut, and it's interesting. Also, with the advent of CDs, you get sort of great albums that seemed perfect, and they sort of stick on 9 songs or 9 outtakes that, you know, probably were better left off and sort of destroy the shape of it. I mean, revision is possible in all forms. One of the things that's interesting and unique about theater is that it is inherently a sort of a non-commodifiable art form. The great director Elizabeth Lecomte actually, you know, is there in the theater changing what the Wooster Group does every single night to sort of stop it from ever being a repeatable experience. And every night a show can not have changed in the text at all, but a different audience, a different night, different things having happened in the world that day will radically alter the experience. So it teaches you a pretty, you know, impressive lesson about how resistant to commodification life in some ways still is. And it's sort of one of the joys of theater.
Is that it's unfixed.
It's unfixed and it's perishable and it goes away. And so I think absolutely playwrights are the only people that create anything like a commodity are seduced by that.